Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks as we continue our long, slow march through the Hush saga, two points in time at a time. First, we are going to be talking about Heart of Hush, Paul Dini's climax of his Detective Comics run, the tie-in to Grant Morrison's Batman RIP, and then we will talk about, is it Hush 2 Part 2, Matt? Is that what it is?
Bob, I really don't know at this point because we have so many sequels to Hush that even I'm confused at this moment. And I'd like to think myself a pretty good Batman historian.
The question is, do we count the Streets of Gotham story that we will get to in later installments? Do we count that as Hush 4? Or do we just count the Heart of Hush and Streets of Gotham all as one big Hush 3 saga?
That's a good question, Bob. Why don't we save that for coverage when we get to the streets? We'll make that decision after the fact.
All right. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. We are talking Hush 3, the entirety of Hush 3, maybe Heart of Hush. And then we are talking what may be Hush 5, Part 2, the new Hush, the Hush with a 2 instead of a U.
There's a 2 in the middle of it for some reason. We don't know yet. I think it's his weapon in some shape. He's going to have a tattoo of it.
He's hiding it in plain sight, Matt, just like the first detective story, the Purloin letter.
It's genius, folks. It's genius. Your jaw is going to hit the floor when you realize that the whole time the 2 was really a snake, and the snake was part of King Cobra.
And yes, listeners, I know the Purloin letter wasn't the first detective story, but Hush and Jeff Loeb don't.
And yes, listeners, I do know that Bob did make that mistake. I just didn't feel like correcting him because I knew he was making a joke.
Thank you. Thank you. So to start with Heart of Hush, aka Hush 3, we're starting out with Detective Comics issue number 846, Heart of Hush Part 1, First Families of Gotham. Matt, what goes down in 846?
Well, Bob, in issue 846, Batman and Catwoman take on Dr. Aesop, but soon discover a greater threat, that Hush has returned.
Somehow, Hush has returned.
And Bob, have we heard of Dr. Aesop before?
I'd assume no. It feels very much a Paul Dini gimmick villain for a couple of these issues. Honestly, I was surprised you even wanted to bring him up. I get why you wanted to bring him up, because it's weird.
Just get the Mad Hatter.
Well, he just did the Mad Hatter in Facebook. Yeah, so he needs a slightly different gimmick villain.
He's disposable, because he dies by the end of this issue. Spoiler, sorry, guys. Dr. Aesop does not make it through this issue.
Maybe he'll be back in Hush, the Hush 2, the new series. Maybe that's the big surprise, Matt.
Man, Bob, that is going to be awesome when that happens. Before you go any further, Bob, just so you listeners know, Dr. Aesop, while his name may sound cool, does not have a cool character design. Not as colorful or as fun as you would think an Aesop's Fable dude would dress. Think Dr. Hugo Strange, but more boring.
Just Dr. Hugo Strange, but more of a furry. I did want to ask in general, did Dustin Nguyen's art look a little different to you this issue and this arc than it did in the prior arc, the Private Casebook arc? Did it look a little more Batman the Animated Series inspired to you?
It did. Everyone's faces are like smoothed out. I'm sure there's an art term for it, but everyone looks a little smoother looking. Doesn't look as rough around the edges.
I didn't bother to look, but I wonder if the inker switched in between these issues and the prior issues, or if Wynn's just slightly tweaking the style. It still looks like Wynn's art. It just looks so different.
It looks great. I have to say the art is awesome in this whole run. It's been great.
Yeah, Don Kramer, who did most of the first two collections of the Paul Dini Detective Comics run, he's not a bad artist, but definitely the art really levels up when they go to Wynn instead of Kramer.
Well, folks, Bob's about to drop a huge bomb on y'all. And it really blew my mind the first time I learned about it. Drop the bomb on us about Hush here.
So I'm now convinced, Matt, that Hush's real name is T.S. Eliot. I'm basing this off, we see his frosted glass office window that's T. Eliot. And I mean, I couldn't verify that anybody had given him the middle issue of S, but it has to be. It has to be, right?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's going to do that. Although, yes, also vile pedants. I know the actual T.S. Eliot, only one T in his name. Whereas, and one L, whereas our Thomas S. Eliot has two L's and two T's in the Eliot. But nonetheless, it's got to be an S as the middle initial.
It never crossed my mind, Bob, until you brought this up. And I'm, wow, never put that together.
Well, especially given Jeff Loeb's penchant for lazy literary references.
Exactly. You would think it was...
Anytime you want to get hollow drama, you either quote Yeats' The Second Coming or Eliot's The Hollow Man. Previously good poems just utterly ruined by their ceaseless repetition. fiction and pop culture.
We do dig up a pop culture detective here, Bob. We get this character that I remember from the Catwoman. Was it the early aughts that we had a Catwoman series?
Yeah, a little later. It's about the same time. Okay. Beanies clearly likes Ed Brubaker and other artists run on Catwoman, where Catwoman and Slam Bradley have a romance. So he works a Slam Bradley flashback where in present day, Slam Bradley's a grizzled old private eye. But in the past, he's a cop. He's a Gotham cop. He's suspicious of a young Tommy Elliot. He knows a young T.S. Elliot killed his father and maimed his mother.
It's interesting to see Slam Bradley, because I do remember him from the Catwoman thing. It was always weird to have a love interest for Catwoman that wasn't Batman.
Oh, strong disagree. It's really well done. That's like the best Catwoman run of all time.
I'm not saying it's a bad run. I'm just saying it was odd to see a relationship with Catwoman that wasn't her and Bruce.
Gets Isabel Jed and Silver St. Cloud. Why can't Catwoman play?
Well, for me to see it.
Matt, would you rather she be hooking up with Catman? Matt, I've been wanting you to read Tom King's Gotham City Year One for a while now, and it is a Slam Bradley story. As we cover the Mark Waid, Mike Waringo Fantastic Four, maybe we could take a small break and also read Gotham Year One. It's only six issues, I believe.
I'd be good with that, Bob. Yeah, a little more history of Gotham City, a little more
in our lives. This arc, and this first issue of the arc in particular, Beanie is really going all out to make Hush work as a character. He's really trying. He's giving him a flashback. He's giving him a rationale for the bandages. He's giving him a fraught relationship with his mother. By what he does with the bandages, but the fetish for quoting Aristotle, I still don't think Beanie makes that work.
Beanie does a much better job than Loeb of making the bandages have some function or symbolism to the Thomas Elliot story. Because I always just thought they were meant to just hide what's beneath. The whole Aristotle thing, Bob, it's never going to work, even though it did force me to learn all about Aristotle when I was originally trying to solve the Hush mystery back in the original one. So I knew all the Aristotle quotes. Wait to see which one was going to pop out next week.
Well, Matt, you had a question for me.
Do we need such an on-point reason as to why that... Does this add anything to the story?
Matt, I will say I've been on the record as saying that there's no such thing as a good Hush comic, that a comic already sucks because Hush is in it. I'm not sure if this is a good comic, but of any comic I've read where Hush is in it, this comes the closest to being a good comic, at least. I'm willing to say that the bandages worked.
We need a scale, though. We need something that says, okay, the Princess Leia belt from the Obi-Wan series, that's something we didn't need an origin for. Hush's bandages, okay, we're okay with that. So when it comes to inanimate objects needing origin stories, we're going to need to make something here.
Well, and this is jumping a little bit ahead, right? But I guess we might as well go ahead and talk about it now. On the one hand, I'm a lot more hostile to prequels than you are, I think. But I think you seem to be more hostile of intertwining the mythos that prequels often do than I am. So this is jumping way ahead, but we find out that Paul Dini's new hot creation, Lady Ventriloquist, that she and Hush used to date. And I don't mind that. It doesn't bother me. If you're going to have Lady Ventriloquist, you might as well intertwine her with other characters. Whereas that seems to really bug you.
It does bug me. I really think Star Wars did it in for me. I think just them trying to usher in every possible connection they could make, canonical connection they could make between the characters, just ruined a lot of that idea for me of going back and trying to fit everybody together. But in this case, Hush is still a relatively fresh character here. And then Lady Ventriloquist is hot off the pages. You've got the exact same person who wrote her origin story a couple issues back, now writing her into Hush's origin.
I would bring up two relevant contrasts. You're right to bring up Star Wars, and you're right to bring up like the insane thing that the Obi-Wan show does, where basically Leia's whole wardrobe when she's 18 and A New Hope is given to her when she's 8 by Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's insane. That said, if I were to defend this a little, I would say with Batman, we're talking about the mythos of a city as opposed to a whole galaxy. And so it makes sense that people's lives would be a little more intertwined. And also, the reason that the Leia thing is dumb is it's dumb that Leia is dressing the same way when she's 18 as when she's 8. That's dumb. And it's dumb because Leia's already a well-established character. the original trilogy did just fine with that. It's gilding the lily. It's adding needless depth. Whereas my argument would be, granted, I would just prefer there would be no Hush comics. But since there are going to be Hush comics, and since he does exist, you do actually try to have to make him a character rather than just the pointless enigma he was in the Loeb and Lee run. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, which is exactly why, Bob, they bring in our next point of there's the hospital that his mom was in that just now happens to be abandoned, and he's taken over, and it's now being overrun by derelicts that are living off Scarecrow fear toxin.
It seemed fine for me. That seems like the type of thing that goes down in Gotham.
Gotham's telling stories.
So, Matt, what was your favorite moment, your favorite panel in this first issue of Heart of Hush 846?
So, Bob, now we're reading from the omnibus once again, guys. So if you are trying to follow along with us, we have an omnibus of all of Dini's work.
A fan-made omnibus, so it may not have the same numbering. In fact, probably does not have the same omnibus as the real omnibus. I'm just clarifying that it's not the same number.
If you're listening and you want to follow along, we're on this issue, and you'll know what I'm talking about when I say it, but there is an image of a young Tommy putting on the necklace, the little lifesaver necklace thing. And then directly below it, you've got Hush putting on the bandages, adult Hush putting on bandages, which I thought was powerful looking.
So that's a good page. He's putting on his uniform. Yeah. For me, I went with page 433. And for some reason in this issue and more broadly in this whole arc, Wynn's cityscapes really look, it almost looks like a different artist is drawing the cityscapes from the figure work that he's doing. I don't mean that as a criticism. I really like how Wynn draws figures and I really like how he draws Gotham. It's interesting to see on this splash page the contrast between Batman looking at the city.
So it makes the foreground stand out more.
It does. So, Matt, in part two of Heart of Hush, Last Good Day, Detective Comics 847, what goes down?
Well, Bob, in 847, Thomas Elliott recounts his origin while Batman warns his teammates of Hush's return.
And what was our favorite panel in this issue, Matt?
Well, Bob, it has to be the page on page 436 where Hush shoots Batman in the back of the head. It's awesome because you really do think it is Batman who's been trapped and is getting shot in the back of the head. Looks like Batman. And you're left for a couple of pages thinking it's him, but we know it's not. And it winds up being some dude that dressed up as Batman.
Yeah.
Serious, he's practicing for later on when Batman does make his way into the hospital. Because Hush just can't pull these things off first go. He's got to practice a couple of times.
Practice makes perfect. Practice makes perfect. Or as a childhood coach of mine used to say, perfect practice makes perfect. So, Matt, do you like Child Hush being in Arkham?
Not really. Of all the stupid things with Hush, like for some reason, this just did not sit well with me. Because I think this fits in with that retroactive continuity thing that just bugs me a little bit. Knowing that he was in Arkham and that he met Scarecrow.
I don't really care at all about this, but just to poke on it a little bit. Man, Scarecrow must be really old, huh?
It messes with her ages way too much for me. I don't like it. And honestly, too, how old is Tommy Elliott's mom if he's 10 and 8 years later, he's 18, about to go to med school, and she's an old, decrepit woman?
A catastrophic car accident ages a mofo.
Even though you have all that money and you're quoting Aristotle and your abusive husband isn't around anymore.
One thing I did enjoy in this issue is we get a scene of Zatanna doing like a sidewalk card hustle with find the object under the three cards.
I did like that too. I always like it when you have her and Catwoman interacting without Batman present.
I don't know the answer to this, but in a way, Zatanna never was a part of the Batman mythos until the animated series, was she? I think it's that animated series episode. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe listeners can point out something else. And also maybe Zatanna did have some backup stories in Detective Comics in the 70s, maybe. I'm not sure about that. But I want to say that, yeah, it wasn't until that animated series episode in the early 90s that we ever had Batman trained with Giovanni Zatara and he had a young romance with Zatanna.
I'm just glad Tommy Elliott didn't have a romance with Zatanna, Bob, and said he was taking shovels to kids' faces, which was my favorite image from this issue, is when he takes this shovel to this kid's face at the summer camp.
Hey, arguably that kid had it coming.
Yeah, he's being a douche, but still, come on, Tommy.
So, issue 848, Heart of Hush, part 3, Heartstrings, what goes down there?
Scarecrow distracts Batman as Hush removes Catwoman's heart.
And my favorite panel in this issue comes early, and it's a two-page sequence. We see Hush perving on Catwoman, and then we see Catwoman immediately defenestrate him. I thought that was a really cool sequence.
Seeing Catwoman with her shirt pulled up and part of her bra reminded me of the entire run of Gotham Knights. I felt like every other issue had that image of some woman putting on or taking off her top.
This story does feel a lot like Hush Returns, just done better. Like,
hell yeah.
You know, granted, this happens all the time in Batman comics, but, you know, somebody knocking Hush out a window, that sort of thing.
This is a very good point in the story where I want to talk about something I learned about Paul Dini, is that he actually wrote this or did all the story work for Arkham Asylum and the Arkham City video game. I knew he collaborated, but I knew he had so much input on the side missions and all that, which all of those involved Hush. So in this particular issue, we do see something, though, that I thought was not Hush-related, but was something Dini created. It was the Titan formula. We see this child who's injected with venom that also has some elements of Scarecrow's poison in it as well, and that's exactly what Titan was. So Dini's just taken this idea
so
and, like,
Titan?
Running with it.
I have no idea what you're talking
Titan
about.
Titan in the game is exactly what this is here.
That's a term they use.
In the game, they have to give the chemical the name Titan. Yes, it's Titan.
Okay.
They've been injected with it, and it turns regular people into crazy psychos, which, I mean, that's not an original idea or anything, but still, it for him to use it so close together was interesting to me because it kind of branches out. We'll talk about this a little later on with some of the Hush comparisons. But this was one comparison where I was, okay, this isn't Hush. This is him literally pulling something that he was going to do later on down the road in Arkham Asylum.
And you found something like that last time, too, where there seems to be a nod to the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul epilogue in the
Correct.
Games.
There's stuff all over the place.
This could be the first time somebody thought of mixing venom and scarecrow toxin. But I feel like it's not, but I couldn't specifically say. Maybe in As the Crow Flies or maybe in one of the late 90s crossovers. I feel that was already done, but you could be right. This could actually be the first time.
I just mean in general, like Super Soldier Serum Bomb, something you would take to make you a better monster.
I just feel like somebody may have already gotten to Scarecrow Bane mixture before, but also I could totally be wrong. Well, so, Matt, what was your favorite panel in this issue?
Bob, on page 464, for some reason they went with giving Batman red eyes, which was a creative choice. I really like the red-eyed Batman. This needs to be a thing.
It's a good look. Heart of Hush Part 4, issue 849, Scars. Matt, what goes down in Scars?
So Batman confronts Hush in an attempt to rescue the heartless Selina, but discovers Hush's master plan. Because she literally has no heart, guys. So I just want to make sure everyone's clear about what's going on.
I don't think you had to explain that, Matt.
I just want to make sure everyone is clear about what's going on, Bob.
Clarity, Matt. Commendable.
Yeah, and I'm going to go a little further in depth here.
You go into depth. Can I just say what my favorite panel was?
I would love for you to, Bob. Tell me your favorite panel.
So as we see heartless Selina in a medical environment being treated, and who's treating her? None other than the JSA's own Mr. Terrific and Dr. Midnight. Two of my favorite characters from the JSA, and I really like how Dustin Nguyen draws them. That they have strange costumes, but Dustin Nguyen kind of doing his animated series, Mike Mignola-inspired version of those two heroes looks really cool. And it did put me in the mind of, I want to make you read the Matt Wagner Dr. Midnight series soon.
What really blows my mind, Bob, is that in 2025, we have a Superman movie coming out that is featuring Mr. Terrific. As a character they're advertising. Mr. Terrific, he's on the posters. And then I go to Target today, Bob, and there's a Dr. Midnight action figure.
It's almost less surprising to see the Dr. Midnight stuff because Dr. Midnight's whole gimmick is physician to the superheroes. So he can show up anywhere in the DC universe with that gimmick. I do think Mr. Terrific is an amazing character. I really like him, but unfortunately, he's really only been good in JSA stuff, and I presume his original appearance in The Spectre, which I haven't read, I need to read. The solo Mr. Terrific comics I've read have not been good, which I don't think that's the character's fault. I just think it's failures of the writers.
Bob, going back to talking about how a lot of this fits in with what happens in Arkham City and Arkham Asylum, I do want to clarify for the readers what happens in this and then how it ties in.
Teach us, Matt. Teach us.
When Lieberman's run Bob and Gotham Knights, Thomas Elliott, he learns a great deal about heart surgery because he had to remove the pacemaker that Joker had...
He was a brain surgeon originally, right?
That's right, Bob. But he had to remove this pacemaker that Joker, remember, he had the surgeon implanted in him. So he had to get rid of that. So he had to learn heart surgery. And it was upon this discovery that he decided to surgically remove the heart of Selena Kyle and keep it in suspended animation via a very complex cryo-freezing machine that was designed by Mr. Freeze. I thought that was cool because we didn't get Mr. Freeze in the original run of Hush. I don't even think he's mentioned once. So it was cool we got to see him do something, have some significance. And what was interesting too is he built the machine in exchange for bags of money, and the artist made sure to draw the most hilarious image of Mr. Freeze standing there being delivered bags of money. And then we find out that Scarecrow's whole Venom child kidnapping, that was a distraction to get Catwoman alone, to set the trap for Batman, so that he could reveal the real big plan, Bob, the big plan. Because he takes those bandages off, and whose face is beneath the bandages, Bob? It's none other than Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne.
He changed his face to look like Bruce Wayne. So what's he going to do, Bob? He's going to take that face, and he's going to go to Wayne Manor, and he's going to shoot Alfred. And then he's going to shoot the kids, and then he's going to sell all of Bruce Wayne's stuff, and he's finally going to be alone and wealthy. Yeah, Thomas Elliot. That's a story. What a cycle.
It is a pretty good gimmick. I do have to say I was surprised because I'd never read this arc. As I explained on the Private Casebook arc, as soon as I saw another Hush story, I bounced. But I had heard about the Bruce Wayne face gimmick, and I was expecting that to be the main part of this story. But like you say, it's really just a big reveal here in the penultimate issue. And so I guess it's more Streets of Gotham that deals with Hush weaponizing looking like Bruce.
And what's interesting is, Bob, this is the side quest in Arkham City for Hush. It's literally, you're finding out that Hush has altered his face to look like Bruce Wayne. He's taking over Wayne Enterprises. You confront him at Wayne Enterprises. It's a little side quest. It's cool.
Other side quests in that game seem to be based on comic stories.
I would have to go back and look, but that's a great question. I don't know.
While we ponder the imponderable, Matt, what was your favorite panel from issue 849, Scar?
Oh, man, Bob. And this issue has one of the best images I have seen. It's got Batman in Joker's cell. I don't know why he decided to go in Joker's cell. He drags Jonathan Crane in there, puts his head in the toilet, and then pulls down on the light and puts it in the water and just electrocutes the hell out of Jonathan Crane. While the Joker is laughing.
Joker,
yeah,
said.
He's over on the bed just having the blast watching this happen. It's so psychotic. It's psycho Batman. Sometimes you get to see Batman be an outright psycho, and that is one of the scenes. I love it.
Did it make you identify with Joker as the reader surrogate character, Matt?
Oh, yeah. Come on, Batman. Give me more of that.
I do like it when Joker is portrayed as a Batman fan. That is a fun touch.
It's a good thing to be a Batman fan, Bob, because in issue 850, Demon in the Mirror, we get the coolest fight in the Batcave. And as a kid, all we ever did was use that little playset that we had to fight inside the Batcave. We had a little Batcave
thing. But it
almost
never happens in the comics. Nightfall, Azrael, and Night's End.
Then we read some in Gotham Knights where the mini Batcave.
Checkmate invaded the satellite Batcave.
It's just so cool to actually see him have to dodge and work through all his gadgets and things and all the trophies and stuff and that also can be utilized as weapons within these fights, which is what ultimately ends up happening.
So this is 850, the final issue of Heart of Hush, Part 5, Demon in the Mirror, and Matt, you had a question for me about getting beat up in the Batcave.
If you were going to pretend to be Batman coming in from the night, you know, you're tired, you've been out fighting crime, and Alfred comes up to you and he's like, hey, Master Bruce, what can I do for you? And would you make sure that your outfit looked the part and that you weren't wearing bright red gloves to give away that you're not who you say you are?
I would say in defense of Hush, Matt, the red gloves looked cool. It was a really cool visual. And then it was a really cool when we have Alfred going Hush fighting him with the red gloves.
So, Bob, do you like Hush with an actual uniform since we've seen Hush shirtless and we've seen the bandaged chest? We've seen the uniform. We've seen turtleneck. Do you have a preference? We know you like the red glove.
I don't know if I like the red gloves generally. I just thought they looked cool in that scene.
Yes.
I think, honestly, if you're going to have Hush, I guess I prefer him to have Bruce Wayne's face and to be operating that way. Maybe I'll eat my words once we read the Streets of Gotham story. But that at least seems to be an angle you can do with Hush that you can't do with any of his other villains, because either they don't know that Bruce is Batman, or they don't care, or they don't care in that way. So, I don't know. I guess if you're going to have Hush, really doing the Bruce Wayne doppelganger thing is the way to do it.
The other thing too, Bob, is the way that Batman warns Alfred of the approaching of Hush invading Wayne Manor is he calls him from the Batmobile. This is why in every other story, Hush has blown up the Batmobile. The one time he doesn't do it, Bob, look what he does. Look what happens.
Well, Matt, I don't think I was as over the moon as you about the fight in the Batcave, although it was a pretty cool fight. I liked it fine. And I did especially like when the T-Rex came back to life, which on the one hand, it seems an obvious thing to do. But on the other hand, I don't think I've ever actually seen that done in a Batman comic. I've seen the origin stories of different versions of him fighting the T-Rex out in the wilderness or in the amusement park or whatever. But actually seeing the T-Rex come to life in the Batcave, that was new.
It was really cool, too. I was glad we got to see some of his trophies that we thought may have been lost. But thankfully, Aquaman, you know, was able to recover them in our Gotham Knights issues.
The other thing I felt very vindicated about, Matt, I'm on the record as saying I think the Whirly Bat's a great idea. I think it makes so much more sense than the Batmobile. I think the Whirly Bat's my favorite Bat vehicle, and I was very gratified that the Whirly Bat was essential for defeating Hush in this issue.
I do like that the artist chose to put every possible vehicle they could in the Batcave. Every version of the Batmobile, there's the Batboat. There's some sort of whale that I have no clue what that's referencing.
A very strange reference. I didn't know what was up with that. I assume it's some wild 1950s comic.
Yeah, I didn't get it. Maybe something's missing there. Do a little research. Maybe there's a... Or does that have to do with Orca?
Oh, yeah, Orca the Whale Woman, but she's not actually whale-sized.
What did you think of the Whirly Bat design, Bob? Do you like this design of the Whirly Bat, or do you like...
Or the more classic 70s, 80s, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez drawing of it, but I'll take it. I didn't think Wynn did a bad job.
I like the gyrocopter look to it.
The gyrocopter is a little bigger, right? The gyrocopter isn't that basically an early helicopter.
The Whirly Bat was the easiest way for them to make action figure vehicles. It's just a piece of shaped plastic you can sit the character on.
Yeah, it's basically a chair with a helicopter blade. Well, Matt, you had a question for me about the final state of Hush.
He gets his bandages all tangled up into Whirly Bat, and he falls to his fate in the waters of the cave. But then they can't find him. They go searching for him, but they can't find him anywhere. How do these guys always escape in water?
It's important because you need to set up Batman-Aquaman team-ups, Matt.
You're right. See, this would have been a good team-up. Where's this filler issue?
I thought the one in Gotham Knights was a pretty good team-up with Aquaman.
Yeah, I want Aquaman doing a deep dive looking for Hush. Joker invaded the Batcave, Bob. Remember in the hole when he had no face? There you go.
And
he does it at some point because he takes the costume of
Thomas Wayne.
So there's at least like five times he's been in the Batcave. And
maybe also in the... When he fights his half-brother at the end of Court of Owls.
Because all the towns are in it. The Batcave's not really as secret as we think it is. I'm sure something happened in No Man's Land at some point. There's always something.
What was your favorite issue of The Heart of Hush?
It's hard because it's one good long run.
Pretty cohesive.
I mean, I did like the action of the final issue, but there's not that much substance to it. It really reminded me of the final issue of Night's End. This, you know, the whole fighting piece in the cave itself, very similar.
I think I'd go with that, too, for myself. It's a good climax. It's a cool environment for a fight. It's relatively novel to have a Batcave fight at this point. It's not like in the Scott Snyder run where you have it every 10 issues. So, yeah, I'd give it to the last issue.
Yeah, I may actually give it to the issue right before the issue Scars. Because, not just because of the scene with Scarecrow getting electrocuted, but also the whole science fiction piece involving keeping the heart contained and alive.
Using apocalyptic technology.
And just seeing it and being like, okay. And me taking that and saying, you know what? I can believe it. I'm okay with that. That's a good job.
Not to be crude, but you really did seem to get off on the explanations that you got to do because of that issue.
Yeah, exactly, Bob. That's it. If I can go, okay, that's plausible, even though it's so insane. If I can say it's plausible, you're good. So there you have it, Bob.
Well, I did want to ask, is this a good comic or merely a good Hush comic?
I enjoyed the comic. It's not my favorite of the Batman comics that we've read, but it's not a bad Batman comic. As far as a Hush comic, it's a better sequel than the Lieberman run. I'll give it that.
It's not just a better sequel. I would say it's better than the original Hush by far.
I wouldn't go that far. But you don't see Hush the way I do, Bob.
No, no.
You don't have my bandaged face.
Your necklace of power, and I don't have your Aristotle fetish. Well, Matt, I did want to ask, do you think we should rank Dini's Detective Comics run as it on its own, or do you think we should wait until we've done the Streets of Gotham run and then rank the whole thing? It's especially difficult because I've never read the Streets of Gotham run, so I don't have a good sense of it.
We should do it separately because I don't know the quality of Streets of Gotham. Maybe that Dini was having an off time. I don't know. Maybe it sucks. I wouldn't want it to ruin what we feel about his whole detective's run.
Does this feel like a complete story, a complete enough run to rank, or does it feel like something's missing and we should see the whole thing in its totality? So if we're going to rank the Paul Dini, Dustin Nguyen, Don Kramer Detective Comics run, and I think we can make a good case that these four trades we've read, they're a cohesive run more or less. And like you say, and it's a good argument, Streets of Gotham might really suck. And so maybe we want to rank this separately because it would do better than Streets of Gotham. So to let the listeners know where we stand, currently we got 11 things. We got John Hickman's Fantastic Four at number 1. We've got Junie Ba's Boy Wonder at number 3. We've got Christian Ward's Batman City of Madness at number 4. We've got Hush at 5. We've got Azzarello and Russo's Batman Broken City at 6. And then we've got a few other things. And then at the very bottom, we have Hush Returns from Gotham Knights at number 11. So for me, Hush is way, way too high on this list. I would put Hush at the bottom of this list. And so it skews what I would say ranking wise. But I could see an argument for putting the Detective Comics run of Nguyen and Dini as the new number 5 above Hush. Or I could see an argument for putting it as the new number 7, which is below Batman Broken City. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense, Bob. All right. What we're asking is, does Dini's run as a whole?
As a whole.
As a whole. Even though Heart of Hush is a sequel, and I personally do not think it is better than the original Hush. You do.
Yes. But okay. Even setting that aside, though, it's not just that I think Heart of Hush is better than Hush. I think the Dini run as a whole does more and more interesting things with the Lady Ventriloquist, with all the Zatanna team-ups, with the pretty good one-shot mysteries, with a much better version of the Riddler. So I think all of those things make it a lot more interesting and a lot more higher quality to me than Hush by Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee.
Right. But if you were just rating Heart of Hush, you would totally put it way further down.
I'm conflicted because you won the coin toss on where to put Hush.
Oh, yes.
And in my heart, I don't accept that Hush is number 5. So there are lots of things that I would put above Hush. And then there are things that I would also put above the things that are below Hush.
Bob, so much like Selena's heart was displaced.
Yes.
Your heart is also displaced where Hush is on our list, and it's causing some chaos. So here's what we'll do, Bob. I'm going to agree with you. We're going to put Paul Dini's Batman Detective run will be on our new number 5.
Okay. So you're willing to say that the Dini run as a whole, better than Hush as a whole?
Better than Hush as a whole, yes.
And I did just want to check, because I don't have a problem with this, but I just want to make it explicit to our listeners. So we're putting this directly below two other Batman comics, Genie Ba's Boy Wonder and Christian Ward's Batman City of Madness. Now, those are both very short, but they're tighter. They've got better art. As good as I like Dustin Nguyen and Don Kramer, I think I like Genie Ba and Christian Ward's art better. But the art's also more consistent in those two smaller runs. So you're comfortable saying City of Madness better than the Paul Dini Detective Comics run?
I would, yes. Though part of me still wants to go back and read City of Madness again, because I feel like I have fond memories of it, but at the same time, I'm trying to remember why we have ranked it so high up.
Is it really so high, or is it just not on a 12-item list?
List is rather short at the moment.
So our list has three Gotham Knights things, which are entertaining but pretty bad. And then it has three things by Brian Azzarello, whom you dislike.
Bob, had we taken Dini's each arc and ranked them separately, what the list would look like?
So I definitely think we could make quality distinctions among the four arcs or the four collections. But at a certain point, they're all part of the same thing. Are they really that different?
Right. And it is contained in itself. I mean, because after Dini leaves, it's a whole new chapter in Detective.
If we were to just rank the Dini collections, Matt, would you be comfortable saying Death in the City, Private Casebook, Detective, then Heart of Hush?
That's where mine will look like, for sure.
We've wrapped the Paul Dini, Dustin Nguyen, Don Kramer, Detective Comics run, but we are going to cover the Streets of Gotham run. However, we decided we're going to wait until a week where a new part of Hush 2 or Hutush is out. And so the next time there's an issue of Hutush, we will talk about the new issue of Hutush, and then we'll talk about Streets of Gotham, the first trade of that. Does that sound good, Matt?
Sounds good to me, Bob.
All right, so we have one thing left to talk about, Matt. That is Hutush Part 2, Rook. Do you want to talk about it first, or do you want me to air my many, many grievances on it?
I'm just going to start quickly, Bob. Just begin with the cover. This just looks bad. Even the positioning of the characters looks bad. You've got Jason Todd, who's in this dated outfit and look to begin with. But then you get in the comic. Oh, my God. I'm taken back, Bob, like way back in time. Like, has anything happened in Batman in the last 20 years? Anything?
Well, certainly not, Matt. And that gets to one of the things I hate the most about this comic is it's just total Red Hood character assassination. And I'm sure there's going to be a couple more swerves, and maybe at the end of the arc, Red Hood will come off looking not as bad. But my God, how many times do you have to tell the same story about Red Hood, Matt?
I don't know, Bob. How do you tell the same story about Batman not wanting the Joker to die? Red Hood needs to get over it. Batman's got to save the Joker. Gonna happen. He doesn't care that he beat up you. He doesn't care that he killed your kid. Doesn't care.
Oh, man, kill all the Robins. My position on this is I don't want Batman to kill the Joker because I don't want to read that comic. But I also don't want 100 comics about how Batman's not going to kill the Joker. He's not going to do it. And then so you just don't write comics about it. Write comics about something that's interesting.
Yeah. And it's how far can we take it to where how close can we get Joker to death? Like how far can we go?
Or right on the verge of dying.
He's got less than an hour's left. If just a little more blood pumps through him, he's going to be dead. Shut up. He's going to make it. This isn't the end of the Joker. We all know Batman's not going to let him die.
That was another thing that I really hated in this comic is that it has a Godfather reference when Batman comes to Leslie Tompkins and he's like, you use all of your skill. And it's just like, Jeff Loeb, you're getting confused. You're also doing Long Halloween 3 this month. And yeah, in the Long Halloween comics, you make your Godfather references. You don't make your Godfather references in your Hush comics. Come on, Jeff Loeb.
That's the truth. We have holograms for everything. All the Batcave there. There's Batmobiles all strung up everywhere. It looks cool. Batman sits on a throne.
Speaking of things that look like the future, Matt, can we talk about the other worst thing about this comic? Riddler 2099 is another comics podcast has dubbed him.
You don't like Warhammer Riddler, Bob, with his steroid level hammer thing?
When I saw Riddler 2099, my first thought was Jim Lee had gone back. He'd seen Venom Riddler from Nightfall, and he's like, you know what? That's a little far. That's wrong. I can do it in a more tasteful, restrained way.
So, Bob,
Do you have the image in front of you at all? Or do you remember what it looks like?
Imprinted on my mind, Matt.
All right, Bob. So what's going to happen in the next issue is Riddler's going to take that cane and attach it to the bottom of that question mark on his chest. And the question mark's going to come off and he's going to use it to hit people with it. This is absolute Riddler, Bob.
I did just want to say that in some ways, the thing that I'm shocked about this issue of Hush 2 is I just assumed I would have no opinion on Hush 2. I just assumed it was going to be terrible and that I wouldn't like it. But this book actually had the capacity to make me angry and to make me upset. And I'm shocked. I am shocked that it was able to do that to me. So in a weirdly negative way, I guess hats off to Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee.
Is it because Batman shoots Jason in the face?
It's because of all the hacky stuff about Batman using a gun, all the hacky stuff about Batman saving the Joker. I'm not like super attached to Red Hood, but this is such terrible Red Hood character assassination, man. This is so bad. Especially we read a few months ago, Boy Wonder by Junie Bob. It does Jason Todd really well. Just how badly this comic treats Jason Todd. And then also how awful Jim Lee's Riddler redesign is. All of it was just such a metric ton of awful that it actually did make me sad and angry, which I didn't think I would feel.
How do you feel if you went and read the original Hush and then pretend like nothing happened between then, like you just had only read Hush, and then you picked this up with the Jason Todd piece? Do you know nothing of Under the Red Hood or any of that stuff? Do you think it would flow better? You think it would feel better?
I think it probably would flow okay, especially because I don't really know this stuff very well, but I assume because of the Arkham games and the Gotham Knights game that people broadly know who Red Hood is and what his deal is. So from that perspective, it would probably flow fine. I guess to go back to something I said when we talked about Hush, I think Hush is a bad comic and I'm not interested in pleasing people who think it's a good comic.
All right, Bob, you got anything good to say about the issue?
So this is actually somewhat positive. Matt, have you ever read late Neil Adams Batman?
I think I've read some, yeah.
Batman Odyssey, the Batman Dead yes, Man crossover.
I have read Mission. Odyssey. I've read some.
So that stuff is terrible, but I love it. I actually do unironically love late Neil Adams Batman comics. I think they are super fun and super weird. And this almost is as insane and random and poorly done as a late Batman Neil Adams comic. And so I could almost see myself loving it in that way. And that also makes me hate Hush 2 even more.
One positive thing about the comic for me, Bob, was that even on the page with the Riddler, where we get this god-awful Riddler design, I did think it was cool that Batgirl has her own armory of costumes.
Yeah. The Batgirl of Burnside.
Batgirl of Burnside.
The DC Rebirth Batgirl.
Got that costume. We got a couple of others. I just thought it was really cool that she now has her own armory.
All right, listeners. So next week, we are in honor of the Fantastic Four movie coming out this summer. We are going to start covering the Mark Waid, Mike Waringo Fantastic Four run, since we already did the John Hickman Fantastic Four run last year. We're going to start on the second volume of Mark Waid, Waringo Fantastic Four. That's Unthinkable, the Doctor Doom arc. We're going to do that. And then we might also do Gotham Year One next week or very soon. And then when Hush 2-3 comes out, Matt, we'll be there. We'll talk about Hush 2-3 and we'll talk about that first volume of Streets of Gotham. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. Well, this has been Uncanny Tracks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.